This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Hang on.
This will be good radio if we can make this work.
No, it's gone. It's crawled back up. I was just about to sneeze.
Nick's got a gerb up. It's a crawlback.
It's a crawlback. It's a crawlback. It's a crawl backside. It's a crawl world.
It would be for the hamster.
Is it a gerbil or is it a hamster? Nathaniel, I've turned up in a very bad mood, haven't I?
You've just turned up, haven't you?
I've literally just turned up. Had a meeting with my lovely agent, Lisa, and I had to go home, toilet myself and wash. And now, as I do at the end of every meeting with Lisa.
Toilet yourself.
And now I feel sick, and I was ill all week.
Yeah, I've been sick.
My name's Nick Helm.
My name's Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to Nick Helm. No, just Nick.
And Nathaniel Metcalf.
And Nathaniel Metcalf.
Nathaniel George Metcalf.
My name is Nick Helm. Helm because once upon a time my ancestors used to helm the Viking boats.
Oh yeah,
they were very much in charge. They're the guys that said to row harder, stuff like that. And you're named after the day that one of your ancestors met a calf. So that's me, Nick Helm.
It was a great day.
couldn't stop banging on about it. It was a young calf, so it didn't go any further than just handshakes or hoof shakes. But I've watched Alan Partridge this week. Can you tell? just as you joined us, you listen to Fan Club. First rule of Fan Club: tell your friends about Fan Club. Wouldn't you do us a solid? And second rule of Fan Club is:
please,
for the love of God or Allah, tell your friends about Fan Club. Now, I've watched so much Alan Partridge this week.
Is this going to take over?
Me and Nat were just talking before we went on air about our favourite song lyrics. Mine is obviously from the Beatles song Sgt. Pepper, where they add in a couple of extra words. Sgt. Pepper's one and only Lonely Hearts Club Band. That's my favourite bit. And what was yours again, Nat?
I like it in... Something's got a hold of my heart. Where
something's got a hold of my heart.
But then he's singing about it,
dragging my soul and my senses apart.
And then he says,
"Whoa, something's got a hold of my soul." What is it?
Yeah, but then after he does that one, and then he goes, "And let me tell you now, something's got a hold of my heart."
Have you ever heard "Mecca" by Gene Pitney?
Mecca, yes, I have.
Oh, fucking hell, Gene Pitney. When I went to university and we still had decks. Fucking hell, CDs were new. CDs were still £59 per CD. A lot of info on there. You could fit up to 12 tracks.
12 tracks.
In the olden days on vinyl, albums were regularly about 8 tracks long.
The kids won't know what you're talking about now, Nick. Vinyl, do they? They don't know what you're talking about. If you mention them.
They do, but only in an ironic way, Nat. tell me, Nat, when did your ancestors meet that calf?
It was about a year before I was born. So it's just quite recent history then. It's still a big deal.
Bloody hell.
I mean, but that calf now is, you know, it's now 40.
What were you? What were your ancestors called before that? Nathaniel, about to meet a calf.
Yeah, good stuff.
It's all gold. It's all gold. All the hits all day long. FUBAR Radio. That's right. For all of your calf jokes, tune into FUBAR Radio because we are fucked up beyond all recognition. aside from the occasional cunt, we're actually fairly child friendly on this show. But then again, we can't vet our guests. So something's got a hold of my
Gene Pitney
and
My Mark Almond.
My favourite nut, Mark Almond. Who's that over
is
there?
Is today?
Hi, hello. We've got a new guest. We've got a new guest.
New character.
We've got a new guest. They're all real.
They're all real, yeah. One of our special guests.
Wrigley, do you know what I heard? I heard that Wrigley Scott is directing a new film.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Steven Seagal. And you never guess who's got to do the theme tune. Mark Walnut.
Mark Walnut.
Mark Walnut. Oh, no. I've been very depressed this week.
No. You've been on your own a lot, then.
Oh, very much so. She's taken everything, Matt! No, I've still got a bit of money. Oh, no. No, I'm moving house, and it's a very nostalgic and dusty experience. I mean, oh God, I've watched so much Partridge. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched a new one. I liked it a lot.
I liked it. I really liked it. Some bits were weaker than others, but I
think it's going to be one of those things, though, that because it's one of those things that's got such a build up to it, isn't it? And I think that
go on.
No, it feels like maybe... I feel like it's going to be one of those things that you could watch again and again and it wouldn't be... I think the trick they missed, which I wish they had done, is just put them all out one after another, day after day, like it is a week.
I watched it... I'm good friends with Joe Fraser. Joe Fraser.
Is he the boxer from the 50s?
Yeah, not the boxer.
Right.
And he... produced my short film, The Killing Machine. He did behind-the-scenes footage on the first series of Uncle for the DVD. And I met him on that. And when I met him and our eyes met, I felt like we'd known each other forever. And we became instant best friends. I only have best friends now. I don't have casual acquaintances.
Okay.
And I try to shuffle them away now. So I only have the good guys. But me and Joe met then. And so he has been... he managed to get like a week off of editing the Alan Partridge show to produce my short a year ago. And... he's been editing it for fucking ages. Like, he was editing it up until August, then he had a month off, and then he edited it up till November, and then they all said we'll sleep on it until after Christmas, and he edited it in the new year. So I've seen little bits and pieces of it while he's been doing that, because we've had meetings and stuff. So it wasn't all like a surprise to me.
Okay.
But I've not been aware of the general public anticipation of it just when he was on the front of the Radio Times, and I was just like, oh yeah. And also because the weird thing is people are treating it like it's the first time Alan Partridge has done a TV show since I'm Alan Partridge, and he's actually been consistently making TV shows since for about 10 years.
I think of it as like it's a BBC One show now, which is
well, he's
quite
never been on BBC One.
So it feels like that's a big deal, right? That it's in our BBC One
show. For me, as Alan Partridge, well, I'm a Steve Coogan fan, and I would say the man who thinks he's it. If you've never seen, I don't know how it's aged really, but I think the man who thinks he's it was his 1998 tour, 1998 tour, and that I bought that on VHS when I was at university. That and Live and Lewd, but that was before he kind of was doing Partridge Live. So Alan Partridge was invented for the Day to Day.
Yes.
And then...
Knowing Me, Knowing You.
It was on the hour on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
And then Chris Morris did the Day to Day, and Alan Partridge was the sports desk guy. And then he had a spin-off series, which was Know Me, Know You, which was one series, six episodes. And then he had a Christmas special, Know Me, Know Newell, where he killed a man on air.
Yes.
And then I'm Alan Partridge was sort of like the behind-the-scenes day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Of, and I think that if it had been made after The Office, then they would have made it like a documentary.
Yeah.
But it was made just before The Office, and I think there was a little bit of a gap before the second series of I
remember it being quite a long time, right?
I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so I think that definitely the first series was before university, and then the second series was in 2002, I think, when I'd graduated.
I remember, because I think, yeah, I have a feeling the first series was about 97-ish, I reckon.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, just before, yeah, okay. And same year as obviously Jurassic Park, The Lost World, and Batman and Robin. For if you need some context, so there was a bit of a gap there, and I think The Office had come along in between.
Yeah.
And when the laughter track was still there,
On the second series.
On the second series, people found that very jarring.
And it also had people. I remember people complaining about it, saying that, "Why have you done this? Why have you put a laughter track on it? Never had one in the first series." I remember it getting complaints to. The Radio Times.
Really?
Yes.
There was a laughter track in the first series.
People assumed there wasn't. They couldn't believe it. Because they said it had been dumbed down.
Maybe they'd been... I do think the second series is dumbed down. I find the second series odd.
I haven't seen the second series nearly as much as the first one.
The first series is an absolute classic series. And the second series is still... do you know what? A lot of the memorable bits that you associate with Partridge are from the second series.
Yes.
But hang on, before we get into that. So they filmed all of... They built the sets in the BBC studios. So the travel lodge was there, and then they... but it was a closed set, and then the audience would sit and watch it on monitors. So it wasn't like they showed the video back. It wasn't canned laughter, and it wasn't that they showed the video back to the audience later on. If you watch it, they're sort of pausing for the laughs, and they're also repeating lines every so often when the laughter has kind of like covered their lines. So it's like a live show, which actually, when you think about it, is incredible.
Yeah, when you think about that, because actually all the performances are quite subtle.
Yeah, but so in the first series...
So you're doing like a... If you're doing a show in front of an audience, which is quite... You know, you sort of... Your instinct is to go broader, isn't it? But they're still doing that kind of very subtle kind of...
Well, all of the cast, all of the staff at the Travel Lodge, Travel Tavern.
Hmm.
I mean, the first series is incredible. Hmm. And the second series, I think, I remember interviews with Armando Iannucci, and he was probably being very, self-deprecating, but he basically said that he was having a mental breakdown when they did the second series because they were just trying to make it as good as the first series.
Yeah.
The problem that I have with the second series is that everyone is a cartoon character. And what I heard was that every episode... So if you're making a BBC half hour, it's got to be 28 minutes. If you're making a commercial half hour, which would be like a channel with adverts, it's got to be 22 minutes, right? So, like what I was saying last week, when we made Uncle on Channel 4, we did the pilot was 22 minutes, and then when we moved over, we had to add another 6 minutes into it. So what I heard was with the second series, the episodes were coming in, the finished episodes were coming in around 40, 45 minutes.
Okay.
And so they had to basically hack the shit out of them in order to get them to fit into the half-hour time slot. And then when you watch the second series, literally every other character is basically there to set up a catchphrase for Alan Partridge. Hardly anyone else gets any laughs.
Mm.
And there's no quiet moments in the second series. The first series is about like, it's like a study of one man's emotional turmoil and breakdown in a travel tavern.
Yes.
And the second series is literally gag, 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 gag. And it's like, and the Geordie builders never change their costume. So they're like cartoon characters. Like in the first series, all the extra characters are wearing uniforms or they're in one episode. So they look the same every episode.
Yeah.
But in the second series, it's just like, why the builders dress the same every week? Why is Lynn's hair so big? Why, you know, he's got a Polish girlfriend, and it's like every single character is like a cartoon character. I think in the second, I love it, and there are loads of really iconic moments in the second series, but it's kind of weird. And the other thing that I really liked about this time, and what I really loved about Well, so the day to day, he's in a news studio. So he exists as part of a real-world kind of TV format.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the best thing about the whole of Partridge, that it has this internal logic to it all.
Yeah, so when you look at Iron Man and Partridge, it kind of doesn't fit in that world where it's actually a sitcom.
Yes.
So now he's become a sitcom character. And when you look at Alpha Papa, it's kind of like, well, in what reality does this exist? I love Alpha Papa as well, but Alpha Papa. But I would say that the opening credits to Alpha Papa, I think they're my favourite Alan Partridge moment of all time. The bit when he's in the car.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The bit of Alpha Papa that never sat well with me is the bit where there's like the dream sequence bit.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that always goes, no, it's not. It shouldn't have dream sequences. But I think it's fine. I think I can do that.
I think if it was a documentary. Do you know what I mean?
It's just if it was done as a document. Yeah, I know what you mean. But I think you've just got to assume that Alpha Papa, like the ones that don't fit in with that world, I think still make sense, but you just have to see it as like they're movies based on the real person, Alan Partridge. Do you know what I mean? They're like, that you're just watching a film version.
No, I can deal with it. It's not like I don't like them because of it, but it's always more. So when they announced that they were doing the second series of I'm Alan Partridge, and they said he was presenting his, was it on the History Channel? He's the war-based show Skirmish. I thought if they had done Skirmish as a game show, and it was Alan Partridge with guests every week. I mean, Alan Partridge hosting a Going for Gold type game show. I don't know if you could get six episodes out of that. But if that was a running thing going through the background, I would have. That's what I thought was going to happen. Yeah. So I pictured that in my mind. And then when I watched the second series, it's just like there's stuff like his book getting pulped and him like trying to sell his book, bouncing back and all of that. And it just feels like they don't give that enough room to breathe to be like an emotional payoff for the entire series. And when the series finished, it was just like, is that it? Is there going to be no more Partridge ever? Is that like, because it could have ended there.
And I think for a while, maybe that was a sort of thought, right? That'll probably be it.
Well, and I think he basically got sick of the character. And then the Gibbons brothers came along. Well, he did the tour in 2008, so it's 10 years after The Man Who Thinks He's It. The Man Who Thinks He's It is basically my favourite live show I've just ever. I watched it over and over again, and I think that in the early days when I did Edinburgh, and I'd do some shows, I did like a few shows, and I rewatched it, and I realised that I had accidentally ripped off a couple of lines here and there. Where they just like become part of your everyday lexicon. But I loved it so much. But I have to say, Alan Partridge was maybe my least favourite of all of his characters.
Yeah, do you know what? But now it's become, I think, my favourite. Growing up, I never really... Alan Partridge was one of the... Sure, Alan Partridge, it's like...
I always really loved Pauline Calf.
Yeah.
And I really... I really loved the Tony Freno phenomenon.
Yes, for I really loved it.
That hour was amazing. The general public hated it. I think that it's a thing where people retrospectively actually appreciate Steve Coogan, you know, retrospectively, in hindsight.
Yeah. Again, Tony Freno's a character, I think, who is totally believable as that sort of crooner. Like, it is absolutely like a real...
Well, it was
could
his,
be a real person. It and it's played like it's a real... Well,
it was his stab at doing like primetime mainstream TV.
Yeah.
And it was so unpopular. I mean, I don't know if I should say this, but he's not listening.
Okay. But like, I think Tony Freno's a really well-rounded character. Like, I think that's
Joe is Steve's nephew. And he said he got bullied at school because Tony Freno was so unpopular. But people hated it. But I think it's my favourite hour of TV, ever. I love it. I love it so much. And all the songs are great, and all the songs are like really on point. It's and live he was incredible on the Man Who Thinks He's It tour. And then live, my favourite character live is Duncan Thicket, who's a terrible stand-up comedian. And when I saw Brian Gittins for the first time, I thought, this is the closest I'm going to get to seeing Duncan Thicket live.
Yeah, yeah.
Duncan Thicket's
an
incredible
character.
I think
I always liked Paul Karff best. That was always
my favourite. Paul Karff is kind of like really... Well, he was really versatile. When they did Cheese and Ham Sandwich, they launched BBC Three. I think that was like 2002 or 2003. And Cheese and Ham Sandwich came out, and that was... Duncan Thicket was comparing, and it was a half hour. Duncan Thicket was comparing, and Paul and Karff opened, and then... Paul Karff closed it, and I thought that that was a really solid thing. But if you got it on DVD, if you got it on DVD, there was they did like a half hour making of, half hour behind the scenes making of the Cheese and Ham Sandwich, and it was basically Henry Normal and Steve Coogan sat in a big kind of like rehearsal studio writing the show. And what's absolutely gorgeous about it is the fact that they're making each other laugh.
Right.
So they're sat in a room, and I think Henry Norman's behind the camera and Steve Coogan's on camera, and they're just writing jokes, and you can see jokes get... like, especially in the early days when I first started doing stand-up, it was kind of invaluable. Invaluable?
Yeah, that's the word. Invaluable.
Doesn't that mean not valuable? Unvaluable. Invaluable.
Invaluable.
Infamous, unfamous, unfamous.
Inevitable.
Unevitable.
What's evitable?
What is evitable?
Natalie? She's not looking at us.
She's not even fucking listening anymore. Obviously not a Steve Coogan fan. Saxondale. Saxondale.
I love Saxondale.
Second series of Saxondale when he grew his real hair and he grew his own beard. Well, he grew his own beard in the first series, I guess, but he had a terrible wig in the first series, and it's quite distracting. Second series, it was more formatted.
But he does. I think Coogan kind of gets better the older he gets in a funny way, because it's like, I think he's got that, like, Saxondale's such a great character that he's quite likable. You're not meant to go, oh, what an idiot.
Well,
I really like him.
When you used to get DVDs, the DVD extras on all the Steve Coogan stuff were just fucking incredible. because that's Keanu.
Keanu.
Well, what's fucking weird about the... Okay, so, God, there's so much to talk about. I love him. I love him so much. I just think he's just... He's basically our generation's Peter Sellers. And Peter Sellers was... widely regarded as one of the gifted performers,
I'm going to take my headphones off because I don't think that anything's coming through them.
Oh, his headphones aren't working. That's why he's been looking distracted this whole time for the last 22 minutes.
No, it's fine. I don't need them.
So Saxondale, yeah, that was an amazing show. I really loved the second series when his hair wasn't so distracting. And I just thought, so when you watch the extras of... the Cheese and Ham Sandwich, you see them develop a joke from beginning to end, where they've come up with the idea and then they're kind of tweaking it and trying out variations on it, and then eventually you see the final thing and you go, wow, that's amazing, that's how you write a joke. And yeah, that's just really educational as from a comedian's point of view as a tool, just to watch that. But also it's really nice because you get an impression from just Steve Coogan that he's a very serious man and that maybe he doesn't get a lot of joy out of what he does. I think he's quite frustrated. And
I think what's good about him is I think he challenges himself in a way that I think lots of comedians don't. And I think he does... Yeah, I think he's got that thing that... I think he's aware of his own legacy in a way that I think a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important because I think he does have that. When he does a new Alan Partridge now, he can't do... Like, it'd be really easy for him to really kind of wring it out and kind of go, well, I'll just do as much of this. But he's actually... It seems like every project is really carefully thought through.
Yeah,
and
but
like,
he's also...
It's got to be good, otherwise I can't do it.
He's mapped out his life as well, Alan Partridge's life.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like... I think he always said that Alan Partridge is him 10 years older.
10 years older, yeah.
And when you watch I'm Alan Partridge, it's like him 30 years older.
Yes.
And he's like de-aged over the years because he's realised that they completely missed... They overshot the mark on how old that he would look. But when you see early Alan Partridge, he looks 12. And then you see him now, and he's really grown into it. And he's just like, but also he's like a cement mixer of like people. You know, it's Alan Titchmarsh, and it's...
Richard Madeley.
Yeah, and Jim Rosenthal. And, you know, it's like, it's all of... It's all of Richard Madeley. I mean... Yeah, very much Richie, mate. But like, but it's just like all of those sort of like daytime TV presenters. Oh, fuck off. I'm just a human, Natalie. I'm coughing. Yeah? It's if you love people, me, you've got to love the phlegm.
It's good for people to know you're only human as well sometimes, yeah?
You've got to love the phlegm. You've got to love the piss and the shit and the... And the
and the, not in the here, though.
Early mornings.
I mean, that's...
Admittedly... a terrible Valentine's Day. what are you doing? What are you coming in? I've got tissues. I'm not sneezing, am I? I'm coughing.
You've
I'm
got
coughing.
Some posh tissues. Nick Helm's got some gingham tissues.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club.
No, I'm all right.
I think you covered that well.
Thanks. So when you look at, I think he's incredible. I love his other characters maybe, or I have historically loved his other characters more than I've loved Partridge. I feel like Partridge was, not to be a snob about it, but I felt that Partridge was, it's his most popular character for a reason, and that's because it's the most accessible. And I really fucking love some of his other characters.
I think, but now I think Partridge might have become my favourite. It didn't used to be.
I agree. No, I do agree. I think that, well, Partridge is the most three-dimensional.
Yeah, I think
because
that's what
he's
I like
had
about
to
it.
Fucking because it's his most popular, so he's had to rethink it. Like I said, it could have ended at the end of the second series of High Man and Partridge, and he could never have done it again. But every time he's had to do like a comic relief or something like that, he's thought about Alan Partridge in terms of why he would be hosting Comic Relief.
Exactly.
And
I love that in the book, in the Alan Partridge book, where it is like everything about it, it's the story, has a story behind him doing comic relief appearances and things.
Yeah.
So it's like him saying, this is why, so I've been asked to do this thing. And it's it doesn't do anything where it ignores that. Like, I think Comic Relief is one of those opportunities, isn't it, for people to go, well, it could be like he'll do like a special one, like a, I don't know if this was, I'm sure they did a David Brent comic book. It's almost like out of the series, isn't it? They go, it's not a real episode. It's like a...
With Alan Partridge, it's all canon.
Yeah, it's all in the canon.
And when I think when they were... So, fun fact, when I was writing my blaps for Baby Cow, so I was at Baby Cow offices. This is 2012, when I was writing my blaps. They were in the next room writing the book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think it was either the book or the film, but I think it was the book. And Amanda Iannucci was in there, and the Gibbons brothers were in there, and Steve King was in there. And it was a thin wall. And basically, I was sat on my own, joylessly, trying to work out what I was going to do for my 3 5-minute slots for Channel 4's Blaps. And it was interspersed every 5 minutes with them... laughing uproariously, and it was quite a depressing experience. Just thinking, I wish I was in that room.
It's a nice idea, though, if you weren't, you know, like it's a nice idea of them sitting around laughing.
Well, you want to be a fly on the wall, not a piece of shit on the other side of the wall trying to do your 15-minute blaps. But then when I was doing The Killing Machine, I think I was in the lobby of Baby Cow. I didn't have a writing room. I was just in the lobby meeting, and we were talking
Is
about
that like
it.
In hospitals where they just have like a bed in a corridor.
There's no bed, mate.
No.
It was a sofa. You could have slept on it, sure, but it wasn't a bed. You know, there's no beds at work. Otherwise, you just sleep in it. That's why I never work from home. Don't get anything done. When I was doing The Killing Machine last year, I was sat in the lobby working on The Killing Machine, and Steve and the Gibbons brothers had the writing room. And same fucking thing. He was like, Steve was going around acting out Partridge, and they were all laughing, and I was just there going, fucking hell, what am I going to do? It was like, and then when I was writing it, I finally got the writing room, and I had all of the, like, they had the whole series mapped out on post-it notes, and I was writing my 15-minute short film, like, being totally towered over by an entire Alan Partridge series on post-it notes, and it was kind of like, oh, God, it was intimidating.
It's interesting to say you're saying it was being re-edited, because it seems like you would have to plan that all first. You'd leave little room for
it. Well, it looks seamless, but I think there's just there's a lot of footage, you know. Mm. But also they've been like just massaging it and squeezing it down to like the thing. So when you look at the Saxondale special features, Steve's basically saying that Saxondale was his favourite character. And the thing about Saxondale was, he goes, you know, Alan Partridge is a buffoon and you're meant to laugh at him. But the thing about Saxondale is he's actually quite likeable. Mm. And yeah, you do laugh at Saxondale and how frustrated he gets, but also Saxondale is making actual jokes and commentaries within the episodes that you are also meant to laugh at. Yeah. So you're meant to find Saxondale in himself funny. So he's less of kind of like a buffoon and more kind of like a philosopher.
Yeah.
But
and I really loved his relationship with his wife. I thought it was really lovely.
Oh, just
I just found it all like really believable.
It's brilliant.
And like, yep, totally get why they love each other.
What's his name? Rasmus.
Rasmus Hardacre?
Yeah, right. He was great. And yeah, like, really I just thought that Saxondale was just. Guys, if you've not seen Saxondale, watch Saxondale. There you go. The second series particularly, I remember really loving because I just felt like they. It was sort of. This is weird for me to say because I don't generally like formatted stuff. I like when I'm writing stuff, I try and go. I try and think when I'm pitching stuff. I try and think, well, every episode's going to be completely different, and then, when you watch Saxondale, it's kind of like got a beginning, a middle, and an end. Every episode starts kind of the same in his neighbourhood. Mm. He's got a next-door neighbour that he has, like, a chat with, which isn't in the first series. And it actually gives it... You actually understand a little bit better what the series is trying to be. I just really loved it. But because obviously Uncle was Baby Cow, so... Well, my blaps were with Baby Cow, and then the script for Uncle came in, and then they said, "Well, Nick would be good for that," and so then I did Uncle. But that's why I am at Baby Cow sometimes. But I got invited to the Alpha Papa premiere. So I went to the premiere, and I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago that everyone got a Terry's chocolate orange.
Oh, yes, yeah,
a soiled Terry's chocolate orange. I've still got mine on my shelf, which I've had to pack up, covered in dust. So I went to that, and we didn't know what to expect, and I was really nervous about it because I think the Brent film completely misunderstands the character and why The Office was likeable and good. I think The Office is one of the greatest.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's wonderful.
The British Office, I think, is one of the greatest. Obviously, I mean, I'm not like saying anything in but it is.
But I think people almost retroactively like decide they don't like it now, where it's like, it's brilliant. It's like it's a real kind of piece of art, you know. Really.
It's changed irreparably the face of international sitcoms.
And I know people go, oh, it wasn't the first thing to do. And it wasn't, but it just did it better.
It was out at the same time as Operation Good Guys, which was basically doing the same thing on ITV, I think that was.
See, I thought that was BBC Two as well.
Oh, was it? I thought Operation Good Guys was ITV, but maybe you were right. And that was, but that was very cartoonish. That was very broad. It wasn't, you know, and it's absolutely right. If you're going to make something like that, you've got to make it as real as possible.
Yeah, you've got to do it as
The Office is incredible.
It's brilliant.
The Brent movie is sort of...
Not incredible.
I don't understand how that happened. It doesn't make sense. I mean, the ending just comes out of nowhere. They hate him.
Yeah, and then they just
and then all of a sudden, because they need an ending, everyone says, "Oh, we've always liked Brent," and you go, "No, you haven't."
Do you know what though? I think a lot of that stuff. Like, I sometimes hear people criticizing movies and things that I've enjoyed, and I go, and when they do a thing about it, they'll say, "Oh, well, actually, this bit doesn't make sense. This bit doesn't," and when I hear them say it, I go, "Do you know what? You're right." But all the only difference is I was enjoying it, and you weren't. That's that I was like quite happy to watch that.
It's the difference between Empire Strikes Back and The Last Jedi, where you go, this, like, whoa, what? They take some the same amount of time to get from one end of the galaxy to the other in a vehicle that can go at light speed as it does for Luke Skywalker to do half his Jedi training.
Yeah.
Well, then it's obviously kind of like they've gone on a road trip and he's done months and months of extensive training. And so obviously that doesn't make sense. You don't notice it, or really, even when you do notice it, it doesn't take away your enjoyment because it's such an amazing film, yeah. You know? Whereas The Last Jedi, it's got probably the same level of plot problems, but yeah. I hated every single second of it. I hated it. Like, I went into it thinking, this is a Star Wars film, I'm going to love it. I loved the Force Awakens. I'm going to love The Last Jedi. And even when the opening crawl came up, I was just like, oh, hang on, there's something not right. And I tried to ignore it for all the film. But by the time that fucking steam iron joke comes along, I'm just like, fuck this film so badly. I fucking hate this film. Drinking fucking green milk out of a fucking walrus's tit. Fucking hated that fucking film. What the fuck? I love women. So I went to the premiere and I was sat next to Julian Barrett, right? Oh, yeah. And I don't know Julian Barrett, but the impression I've got is that he's a bit standoffish and a bit, you know, maybe he's a bit too cool for school. So that's just the impression I've got. But I think that's largely part of his character that he plays
sure,
in The
yeah,
Mighty
yeah,
Boosh,
yeah.
Right?
So, yeah,
so I didn't really...
Wasn't based on any real...
No, nothing. Just based on kind of like an overall impression I've got of the thing. And I was sat next to Julian Barrett and I was like, well, he's a bit too cool for school. And he laughed his fucking ass off the entire film and it annoyed me. No, it didn't. It made me go, oh, fucking hell, Julian Barrett's all right.
Because, of course, he's someone he's a who really is. He will have grown
he's
up
just
with it as well.
He's a fan just like everyone else. Mm. I've got a funny story about that sort of relates to Julian Barrett, but we've got to play a song, so maybe I'll say it afterwards. Are you okay to play a song?
Yeah.
Have we done what we needed to do? This time with Alan Partridge, I really enjoyed.
Me too.
And I love Alan Partridge.
Me too.
Oh, Alan.
Yeah.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Proof that not all Alice Cooper songs are gold. That's from Flash to Fashion 1980.
Interesting one, though. Interesting. I was saying it sounds a bit like Sparks or something like that.
Well, you've got to understand that Alice Cooper basically, with all the elements, all of the stage elements, and a lot of it was written to be performed live on stage. Mm. You know, it was like Queen were kind of like wrote stuff for audience participation. Like a lot of the Alice Cooper stuff was kind of like, and then what props are we going to use? What costumes are we going to use? When am I going to get guillotined or hanged?
What was he going to do there? Try and complete a giant crossword?
Well, but all of those elements that Alice Cooper put into the Alice Cooper band from 69 to 75 that they put into their live shows, then when Alice Cooper changed his name by deed poll from Vince Vernier to Alice Cooper so that he could basically, as a solo act, legally just call himself, like, nick the band's legacy and just go, yeah, I'm Alice Cooper. And it was just like, no, the band was Alice Cooper, and now he's Alice Cooper, and now he did Welcome to My Nightmare, which was this fucking huge show. There was a point in time when Alice Cooper was inventing trends, where he invented kind of like, he didn't invent glam rock, but he invented that kind of like shock rock type stage persona, like to the point where Kiss basically, when Kiss got created, they basically said, what's better than one Alice Cooper? Four Alice Coopers. Mm. That's why one of them looks like a cat. You wouldn't want to be Peter Criss. What's my makeup, guys? Well, I'm the star child. That means I'm really cool and I've got a star over one eye. That Space Ace, he's basically a spaceman and he's got silver makeup. I mean, pretty good. And Gene Simmons is the demon. He looks like a demon and he's going to spit blood on stage. Yeah. What's my character? I don't know, a cat?
like a leopard or like no. A big...
Peter.
Like a lion.
Like a tabby tiger. Cat. No, like okay. A tabby cat. You're going to have whiskers painted on your face. And well, all right, but I'll be at the back, yeah.
It's all right. It's not like this band's going to last long.
But like Peter Criss, he's the one that sung Beth. Beth, I hear you calling, but I can't come home tonight. Me and the boys are playing, and we've got to get it right. Just a few more hours, baby. And then I don't know any more of the words.
Is it an autobiographical
track? But no, I think he wanted to call it something else, and then the others bullied him into calling it Beth.
Right.
But it's probably the best moment in the Kiss movie, Kiss at the Phantom and the Phantom of the...
Oh, I've not seen it.
Oh, it's
something.
What's the Kiss film called? Phantom of the Park?
That's what I was going to say. Some murder at Phantom Park or something.
I think it's the Phantom of the Park or something. It's fucking incredible. I got these Kiss box sets and it's just... It's like basically Kiss are the Scooby-Doo gang. And they turn up at the theme park to do a gig and they have to solve a crime. But they're like, Gene Simmons is a demon that can breathe fire. And
oh, really?
But it's done with the worst special effects and they basically, they wanted to destroy it. They were so like, Kiss meets the Phantom of the Park. They wanted to destroy it. It's only available as part of that box set. Kissology, I think it's called. And it's like a four-part box set.
Okay.
And it's actually, there's some amazing interviews in it. What you really realise is that Ace Frehley is the loveliest man on the... I mean, he's fucking gorgeous. This is incredible interview that they did in the 70s where Ace Frehley and Peter Criss are blatantly stoned off their tits and Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons are not happy about it. And it's just Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley just look like the fucking most spoiled, ungracious bitches on the entire planet. And every time Peter Criss or Ace Frehley, but it's mainly Ace Frehley. Ace Frehley was everyone's favourite, right? Everyone's favourite member of
Kiss.
Got
a cool name.
He's just fucking wicked, right? And when they did, so basically, I think it was 1978, they all did a solo album. Where, you know, they released four solo albums. They had four album covers that basically were of the same. It was like a illustrated picture of their face on a black cover, and I think Paul Stanley was blue.
And so solo albums, but within the Kiss sort of.
Yeah, so they released four at the same time that were all Kiss, but they were all their solo albums. And then inside, they all came up with 1/4 of a poster.
Oh,
that
okay.
You can slot together like jigsaw puzzles.
A bit like Outkast did, but they did their own album.
Sure. Okay. I don't know what that is, but I think that's post-1983. So that was a lie. Terminator was 84, so was Ghostbusters. So, and then obviously Back to the Future is 85, same year as the Black Cauldron. So, my tastes solidified in 1993.
It's an interesting idea, that.
So they all released four, and Ace Frehley's literally sold out within years. I bought all of them on vinyl from, I was in New York, and I went to a secondhand record shop, and you could buy the other three really quite cheaply, and they didn't have Ace Frehley. So I had to find that separately, with the jigsaw pieces in it.
It's similar to, Gary Barlow tells a story of going to Toys R Us to buy himself a Gary Barlow doll, and he goes with his hat on, gets his
Is this one of Gary Barlow's faux modest stories?
No, not really. Well, sort of is, but he's got that thing where.
Do you know what? Gary Barlow's all right. No, he is. He's so modest. He's so down to earth. With his offshore accounts and voting Tory, he's all right. Gary Barlow. Gary Barlow's all right because he's not as much of a cunt as Robbie Williams. Carry on.
And well, you know what, I agree with you. But he had a thing where he went into Toys R Us to try and, when they had to take that dolls, and the only ones they had left were Gary Barlow's. And he said, is this the only one you've got left? And they're like, yeah. Did you order more? And they go, no, we've got more of the Gary Barlow's than the others. He goes, oh, yeah, good. And then they said, yeah, because if you buy the other three, you can get Gary for free. And he go, oh.
Yeah, that's one of his... Yeah, sure. He's all right, though. I mean, he's a great songwriter. Sometimes I sing a song around my flat, and I think, what's that? And I realise, it's only bloody Gazza, Gary Barlow, not Fog in the Tyne.
I think there's a thing in his book about how he wasn't jealous of Robbie Williams once, and he goes, yeah, well, between me and Robbie is, he might have all the girls and the money, but I've still got an Oyster card. And it's about when he wasn't going to get bothered on a bus...
Who said that?
Gary Barlow. He goes, you might have girls and that, but I've got an Oyster card. It's like, we've all got an Oyster card, Gary. It meant that at the time he was anonymous and he'd be able to get around London all right and no one would bother him. And that was his sort of...
That's fucking bleak. did you make us tea or not? I'd like another wine glass of water, please. Thank you. Please, I genuinely please. We couldn't do this without you, Nat. Italy. but the fucking... the Kiss... Ace Frehley's is fucking great. And basically Gene Simmons has been really fucking out of order. So they're doing a retirement tour. So Ace Frehley left the band three or four times in the 80s, and he had substance abuse problems, and so did Peter Criss. And the whole point of them all wearing makeup in the first place was that they could live forever and be replaceable. But Gene Simmons hates Ace Frehley so much that they replaced him with a guy called Tommy Thayer, or Thayer. I'm not exactly sure how you say his name. Or Thayer's name. But they replaced him with Tommy Thayer, who was basically the head of the Kiss fan club, who used to come around Gene Simmons' house and clear out his gutters. And they replaced Ace Frehley. He's on all the albums now. And I can understand I'm needing someone reliable, but basically Ace Frehley has had quite a successful solo career, thank you, for as long as he's left Kiss. And I've got my own mug, and you've got Natalie's.
I've got Natalie's mug.
Basically, he's He's had his own solo career for as long as. And he's the guy that wrote... no, he didn't write it. I found out it was a cover, but he did New York Groove. He made the New York Groove song famous. Do you know New York Groove?
That's right, I think, do I?
Can we download New York Groove if we haven't got it? Or have we got it? Yeah, that's a really good song. But it was done a few years before, almost identically, but Ace Frehley gives it an extra spin. Anyway... real quick story, which was that I was in my flat and the doorbell goes. It was just about Christmas time, and I go up and I answer the door, and there's have I said this on air? I don't think I've said it on air.
I don't know where it's going
and I answer the door and it's a courier, and he's got a bottle of champagne and a box of chocolates, and he says, are you... I've forgotten his fucking name. Who was I talking about before the song?
Steve Keegan.
No. Julian Barrett.
Julian Barrett.
He says, are you Julian Barrett? Or he goes, Julian Barrett and Julia Davies? Because they live together. And I was just like, no. I'm Nick Helm. And he goes, oh, I've got this delivery. He had a bottle of champagne and a box of chocolates. He said, I've got this delivery for Julian Barrett and Julia Davies. I said, well, that's not me. But I just sort of moved into my flat that year, and I thought, could I be in Julian Barrett and Julia Davies' flat?
Old flat.
Am I living in their old flat, maybe? Thank you very much. Just got some tea. No, I didn't. I got a goblet of what? Water.
A goblet of what?
I was going to say wine, but it's not. Anyway, so I thought maybe they used to live in my flat. And then I was just like, no, they don't live in my flat. Because once I was walking along Stoke Newington and I saw Julian Barrett going to like the local shop, and I just thought, oh, they must live around here, which was like the other side of town. So I was, and that town is London.
London town.
London town. It's a city. And don't you ever forget it. So I was just like, well, maybe it's not them. And anyway, I was thinking all of these things while this guy was in the door, and I said, no, that's not them. And I said, but hang on a minute. Who's the delivery from? Is the delivery from Baby Cow? Because my name's Nick Helm, and I've worked with Baby Cow, but so have they. And it's Christmas, and it's like a Christmas delivery. And I was just like, so is it possible that you've got like your names mixed up, and maybe the delivery is actually for me, and you're going to go on to them next? And he said, no, don't think so. This is for Julia Davies and Julian Barrett. And I was like, fine. So I closed the door and I went back down to my flat. And about about 30 seconds later, the doorbell went, and I went back up and got it. And it was the courier at the door with a bottle of champagne. And he says, are you Nick Helm? And I went, yeah. And he goes, this is for you. He gives me the bottle of champagne. I said, what about the chocolates? And he goes, yeah, you don't get the chocolates. I think maybe the chocolates were for Julian.
There you go.
But there's just one of me. So that's I did get a bottle of champagne.
To yourself.
But the chocolates, oh, my God, they were gourmet. I'm just going to... what is the name of the reindeer in Frozen?
The reindeer?
Yeah.
I don't even remember a reindeer in it. There's a snowman in it.
It's
called like Oscar or something.
When you know... The snowman was called Olaf. When you know what the reindeer is called, you'll go, yeah, of course it was fucking called that.
Oh, really? I did think that about the snowman.
It's Nordic,
to be fair.
Isn't it?
Is he called...
it's the most fucking cliched, stereotypical, racist name that you could call him.
What racist term would I call a Nordic person?
Oh, probably, let's not do this live on air. For those listening at home, Nathaniel can be quite racist.
Yeah, when it comes to people.
Anyone.
Anyone, yeah, you're right.
Anyone not of his ilk.
I don't know, Nick. Sven.
Oh, well, that was a short round. I've got a terrible tickle in my throat.
I don't think anyone's noticed yet.
Got it. Right.
Good.
Every week I press the wrong fucking button. Fan Clubtastic, Plastic Elastic, Jurassic. Jurassic nice. Doesn't rhyme, but nice try. Lick my forehead and earlobe 42.
That's a good name. Five stars. Good start.
I enjoy the show. Nathaniel is so hilarious, and I love his stories about life and stuff.
Lovely.
The other fella can be amusing too. I'd love to know if Nathan likes peaches. Who's Nathan?
Don't know.
Started well, fell apart under the hoist of its own petard.
Nice peaches.
Keep on top. P.S. Could I come lick you or your quiet producer, you shoiter at? Well, lick my forehead and earlobe. It started strong and petered out. Does anything peter in? It's Josh Widdicombe.
It's some old material, isn't it?
It's very
That's
old.
That's like 2008, isn't it, or something?
I think it was. He was still doing it. He did it. Still doing it in about 2012. Okay. Thanks, Nick and Nat. Five stars.
Not
Gina.
A five-star.
Gina Horrorhead. I think that basically they're trying to annoy me.
I think they are.
Because Nathaniel is so hilarious. It's obviously something that's in there to designed to chafe my ass.
it
has annoyed me.
It chafed your ass.
We used to say that all the time at uni.
Chafe your ass.
What's wrong with chafing your ass? We did perfect movie last week, didn't we?
We did.
Didn't talk about that. Perfect movie. That was good. Oh, I really enjoyed. You were fucking hilarious last week, Nat.
Oh, good. Thank you. Not today.
No, not today. But as per usual, I've kind of done most of the heavy lifting. I do talk a lot. But do you know what, Nat? I spend most of the week not talking to anyone.
Especially this week.
I am aware that I'm kind of like egocentric and I do talk all the time. And I do every week come in thinking, I won't do it this week. And every week I leave feeling disappointed in myself.
Oh.
And I feel like I've done it again. I've only fucking talked over him. And when I listen back, I think, what a monster. and I genuinely... I long for the day I'm too ill to come in and you can just do the show without me.
I don't think I'd like to do it by myself, Nick. I think it'd be a bad
show.
Yeah,
whatever. So I enjoy the show. Nathaniel is so hilarious and I love his stories about life and stuff. Yeah, I know, but I just think there's something in there which, you know, I'm analysing it and it's fucked me off.
Do I like
because
pages?
They think that they're better than me. I enjoy the show. Nathaniel is so hilarious and I love his stories about life and stuff. He doesn't do the stories about life and stuff. I do the stories about life and stuff. Right, the other fella can be amusing too. The other fella's me, right? That's fucking annoying.
Just got
right?
mixed up.
My name's Mick Melm, and I'd love to know if Nathan, right? So you fucked it up there, but you mean Nathaniel? Do you like peaches?
Yeah, kind of.
Like tinned peaches?
No, I think I prefer a tinned peach.
Fine. We all do. Keep on top, unless she's using that as a euphemism for vaginas, which is what they do in Face Off, don't they? Because I could suck on a peach all day long, and you just think, oh God, I hope the whole film's not like this, and it's not. It gets a lot worse. Because just imagine Nick Cage saying, I could suck on a peach all day long, and now imagine John Travolta saying it. John Revolting is what we used to call him, although I've always liked him, and I especially liked him in Broken Arrow. P.S. Could I come lick? Oh God! You or your quiet producer?
You shoiter!
I mean,
putting that shout.
It's a five-star review, but just for the listeners at home, if you're going to give us a five-star review, don't. That is a one-star, five-star review. I would say we're reviewing you now, guys, and try a lot fucking harder. We put 2 hours in a week. To this two-hour show. I put in about an hour and a half a week into the two-hour show. And hour 15. Okay, thanks, Nick and Nat. Five stars, Gina Horrorhead. Caught up with the last couple of shows today. Loved the interview with Van Ling. Really interesting. I agree. I really did find that super interesting. And also really enjoyed the chat with Jim Hosking. Off the back of that, I watched The Greasy Strangler. This is what the show's for, isn't it? To, like, introduce people into stuff. one of the most disturbing films I've ever seen. Funny, but also absolutely disgusting. Loved hearing Nick and Esther talk about it. Absolutely correct. It's really funny, and also I think the most disgusting film I've ever seen. We had to do, we didn't have to do, but there was that Twitter thing going on this week of top four films. I literally just went like, these are the four films that come into my mind instantly. I regretted writing them. What did I do? I did Army of Darkness, Tommy Boy, Royal Tenenbaums, and I can't even remember what the other one was.
I can't. That's it. I thought that's a good way to do it, actually, to go, what immediately would you go, these?
Yeah. If it was a top 10, I would put The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, The Thing, if The Thing wasn't already on it. Oh, I put Deep Red on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But the Deep Red is interchangeable, I think, with The
also,
Thing.
As soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, I mean, that would be in
line. The Deep Red is real. The Italian cut. Mm. And Army of Darkness, the UK theatrical cut. The director's cut is shit. But yeah, I mean, The Greasy Strangler would be on my top 10. Anyway, loved hearing Nick and Esther talk about Elephant, which I've watched lots of times, but had to watch again after hearing them talk about it. But also to get over the sick feeling I felt after Greasy Strangler.
Again.
That is a good thing. If you do watch The Greasy Strangler, you want to get over the sick feeling. If you want a palate cleanser, then watch mine and Esther's short film, Elephant. I adore Elephant, and it was the perfect end to my day. And it was the perfect end to my career. keep it light. Thanks, Gina.
What a lovely one.
Do you know what?
And I agree.
And what a bloody lovely song. What a lovely, I say song, but that review did read like a song in a way, didn't it? I was just distracted by the fact that we're going to play a song now. Right, we've got to get our guests on. Is there anything to clear up, to wrap up?
Are we playing my song now?
Do you want it, or do you want New York Groove? Let's play New York Groove.
Can I have my song in after?
We'll play your song at the end.
Okay.
What's your song?
It's Love Me.
Dudley Moore.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all right, let's play that. Is that what you want?
Well, yeah, it went to the Stanley Donen died this week, who made Bedazzled and Singing in the Rain.
Oh, fucking hell. Well, he's one of the directors of Singing in the Rain, right?
Yeah, well, I think Gene Kelly had a lot to do with it, didn't he?
I mean, he's such a good-looking, gorgeous, talented man.
He's quite a muscular man as well, isn't he?
Gene Kelly,
for a dancer.
But he's such a fucking fascist.
Is he?
He was, yeah. I mean, he was such a fascist that he ended up getting a directorial credit. I mean, he probably did that. He directed it. But he was a perfectionist, difficult to work with. But when you see him in the film, you know,
it's
difficult to believe. He's so charming and good looking and gorgeous that it's difficult to believe that he was calling his co-stars cunts 2 seconds before he yelled action.
Love me! Love me!
Please come and love me.
Oh, love me.
I need you so, please don't go, stay and love me.
Oh, love me.
Tell me you're full of yearning for me.
Oh, love me.
Touch me and say that you can't live without me.
Oh, love me.
Please come and love me.
Oh, love me.
I need you so, please don't go, stay and love me.
Oh, love me.
Tell me you're full of yearning for me.
Oh, love me.
Touch me and say that you can't live without me. Please come and love me.
Oh, love me.
I need you so, please don't go, stay and love me.
Oh, love me.
Tell me you're full of yearning for me.
Oh, love me.
Touch me and say that you can't live without me.
Oh, love me.
Tell me you need me. Touch me and say I've got to have you. Oh, don't run away.
Club on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, we're back. Why did we play that song? Because the guy died that directed
Stanley
the film.
Stanley Dunne and directed Bedazzled.
Yeah, but he didn't write the song, right?
No.
He didn't direct the song.
No.
No. Okay. Well, just saying, it was fine, but it's no New York groove. We're joined in the studio now by comedians. And do you class yourself a comedian still?
Yeah. I'm not match fit.
I can't hear Katie through my...
Oh, no. Can you hear me?
You're not match fit. I'm not match fit. But you're a novelist, a writer.
Yes.
A novelist?
Yeah.
Hello, we're joined in the studio.
Let's start again.
This is why... I'm not going to put in more work than I have to in this show, but it looks like I haven't put in the work that I had to. we're joined in the studio by two of the drunk women solving crimes.
Yeah.
Katie Wilkins and Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
Taylor, you are our first ever returning guest.
Oh my goodness, thanks.
No, thank you.
Genuinely honoured by that. Wow.
No, okay. we're honoured. It's Aww. Very, it fills us with absolute joy to welcome two people that are involved in a much more successful podcast than our own.
It isn't a podcast. It's a live
radio
show.
It's a live radio show. It becomes a podcast. It is a bit of a downer, actually, having you on. So if you could just fan our egos a little bit, that would be great.
I love you guys. It's so good to be back.
That's not just anyone saying it. It's returning guest, Taylor Glenn.
First ever returning guest.
First ever returning guest. And Katie. Taylor, you've been on before. So
I'm just
going to
be silent
for
the next 20 minutes.
Just enjoy your tea and pipe down for a moment. Katie, we have known each other for almost our entire careers as comedians.
So 11 years.
We did a show together in 2008. Was it 2007?
I think we maybe met in 07, but we did the show.
We met in 07. In
07.
In 07, I did the super good comedy good show with Saz Campbell and Gronnie McGuire.
Awesome.
And it was a three-hander, and I believe I closed. But the next year I compared for you,
yes,
Hannah and Richard Bond.
That's
Hannah,
right.
Hannah George, that is.
Hannah George.
The woman with the two first names. And
and the third drunk woman.
Oh, my God. And the third drunk woman. And she has been on. So next time what we'll do is we'll get Katie and Hannah on, and then all of you have done two.
Yeah.
And it'll be the Silent Women Say Nothing podcast.
Yeah. All right, Taylor. I might just...
That's just every
which
other
microphone,
podcast.
Which microphone is Taylor on? I have to bring it down. Okay. So what are you, Katie? Because you write...
What are you?
Have you got anything to plug?
Actually. Do we do that now?
I find that if we get it out of the way now, we can just mention it again later if we remember.
Oh, okay. So my new book, When Good Geeks Go Bad, came out this January. It's a middle grade book for sort of 10 to 14-year-olds, sort of PG young adult. There's no swearing.
There's no fuck or cunt in it.
That's right.
Do you feel now?
There's no fucks or cunts in it.
That's how I pitched it.
Yeah.
If you're one of Katie's fans listening in, there might be some words that you might need to look up in a dictionary and
they're just
and the meanings of
parental guidance.
So that's the thing now, right? So 10 to 14. So what was the name?
Taylor,
it's
you can talk. I feel bad.
No, you're taking me right back to my childhood, and I'm going to sit in the corner.
Oh, well, in many ways, people say that's one of my gifts.
I was just going to say it's a great book, and actually a lot of...
Because
I hang around the parent circuit a little bit, so a lot of people... Katie kindly signed some copies for my friends, for their kids, and they're all loving it. It's just a very wonderful, relatable book. To be honest, you said the age range, but it's also on my level. I'm really into that age range at the moment. Reading.
Sort of like all. Yeah.
How long did it take you?
Oh, yeah, that's my fan. That's the thing I'm a fan of.
Hang on. We're still at our show. You're not just here to have a chat. You could have had that chat in the fucking green room. Right? When I'm asking a fucking question, you do not talk over me. I don't care what you do on your fucking show. All right? Right? I'm sober as a fucking judge.
Hammered.
Gavelled. Fucking... Give him a minute. So... how long did it take you to read, Taylor?
Katie's book?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I read it over 2 days, but it didn't take the full 48 hours.
It's like maybe a couple of hours you could read it in.
And if you're a child?
Oh, I'm really embarrassed. Well, I think I was going to say it took me 4, but if
it's
a little quicker.
It's 40,000 words.
Oh, is that how you do it?
Yeah.
You go, it's got to be 40,000 words.
What
was my dissertation? My dissertation, dissertations are like 10,000 words, aren't they?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like 4 dissertations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have audio books for them?
There is going to be one for this. So the first 4 books, the My Best Friend and Other Enemy series, which are also funny books, and they're for 8 to 12-year-olds.
And Taylor.
For Taylor. And they didn't have audio, but the new one is going to have audio, and I think it's coming out soon, actually.
Ooh. How do they make
those
decisions?
The audio?
No.
That's some fucking bullshit, Katie. You've got one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard.
Do you know what? I've not spoken of this before. They did ask me, and I said no because I was too scared that I'd do a shit job.
God.
Katie,
what are you fucking talking about?
But you have to go back and change your mind and then their minds again.
You've got an exceptional timbre.
I thank you.
Good use of timbre.
Thank you very much. The only way to use it, really.
I never know how much grit to put on Tom.
Macabre.
Yeah, macabre.
Is it macabre or is it macabre?
That's what my dad does.
It's macabre.
So that can't be the right
way. It is macabre. But I realise that I only know the pronunciation of macabre because of the beginning of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And he says macabre.
Oh, very good.
And it's not macabre, it's macabre, because I looked it up on Google because I needed to use it. What's the other one that everyone always gets wrong? A hyperbole. And it's hyperbole.
Yeah. Who says hyperbole?
I used to say hyperbole. I thought it was like some futuristic
very
sport.
I used to mispronounce apartheid.
How?
I used to call it...
You thought it was a party? You're like, what's everybody complaining about?
I called it apathet.
Apathet.
That's fine.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's fine.
I mean, I didn't know what it really was.
What was the occasion where you learnt it? Was an embarrassing thing when you said it?
Oh, it was fucking during... When you were hosting that Nelson Mandela speech evening. Fucking hell.
You were closing that, weren't you?
I was closing. I was opening and closing. Right. It was weird. God, Nelson did a good job. he covered for Katie. Get him.
Apathet.
Apathet. If anyone listening at home, if you mispronounce any words, why don't you pop it in a tweet and let us know, and we'll read some of them. We'll try and read some of them out at the end of the show.
We've never done that before.
But I'm interested to know how many listeners we actually have. Yeah. We've been asking for nigh on 10 months, and she keeps saying, no, you're doing very well, but...
What, they won't tell you?
Well, fucking Rich Wilson, not that one, has released a podcast, and he's number 27 in the podcast charts. And it makes me think that if he can be number 27 on the podcast charts, then why the fuck... Why the fuck is something that's just as solidly good with consistently good guests and returning excellent guests? I find that the best way of doing this show is to just tell the guests how good they are, but not let them talk and prove that they're good. You just like go, they're so good. You got such a lovely voice, Katie.
But don't use it.
Got such a lovely voice, Katie.
What?
It's got a wonderful lilt to it.
Thank you.
Let it run the tone. So I'm annoying myself. This is one of those things that on the way home, I will hang my head.
What is Rich Wilson's podcast about?
Oh, it's about fucking men with mental health issues. Has anyone ever listened to Fan Club?
It's called Insane in
the Membrane. And you go, sure. But that, in a way, that's what this show is about. Mm.
But not explicitly.
Well, you're not wearing it. You're not wearing it on your sleeve. You've got to do a bit of digging yourself. But you will find out every week. Yeah. I'm off the pills. And I'm feeling pretty good. I'm not. I'm moving house. It's a fucking nightmare.
Oh, wow.
You don't want to hear about my shit. So, that's what... I'm overexcited. I'm so happy to see you, Kate. I think the last time I saw you was 4 years ago when we went out for lunch.
Oh, yeah, with my baby. Mm. Yeah. Aww. And now she's four, yeah.
I would say you are probably our most requested guest,
what?
Katie. As we request to Natalie. And she always says, no way. No way. So you're not. I reckon since I think you're on our initial list of people, right? So that would be 10 months ago.
Or that's maybe amazing.
Taylor.
It's taken a while.
Yes.
Taylor. Oh.
Yes. I'm like, every time I look at you, I'm like, I'm not supposed to look at you.
This is you've been told not to look at me.
Like,
you're
this is unprecedented.
Where is the camera that it ruins?
I've been ignored so much.
They're just breaking off into their own show over there.
We've got two separate shows.
Okay. Well,
sorry.
What number does it say
it's
on your
spin-off.
Microphone?
It's a spin-off.
It'll say here on the joint here.
Wait.
It should say here, right here.
On the... Here.
Yeah, yeah.
This is great radio.
I'm gonna need copy front of two. This footage of Katie just surrounding the microphone back and forth, just looking.
I mean, I can't see it either.
There's no number on it.
What number is Katie's microphone?
Two. I'm two.
Is it two? And Nat's is three, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I see.
So Taylor.
Yes. Hi.
What letter is assigned to Will Smith's character in Men in Black?
Oh, wow, I don't remember.
Your mic's not on that.
Q?
Oh, I know.
I really don't remember.
I'll put them back on.
I can show!
Seen the film.
Is it K?
No.
Isn't it?
M.
It's not Q.
X.
What's the likelihood, Katie?
P.
In another franchise, other than James Bond, they've called one of the main characters M.
I don't know.
Very slim. What's the main character in your book?
The new book.
Yes.
Her name is Ella.
That's it's weird. Because Ella is the name of the characters that I've written in my book.
Good.
It's Jay.
Jay.
God, they're exceptionally hard but easy this week. Mm. Katie.
I forgot about
Will Smith's 2007 movie.
Well, they love
movie.
Will Smith, don't they?
I mean, this has been shuffled as well. Will Smith's 2007 movie, I Am Legend, is set in which... Us city, US city.
Us. I haven't seen that film. It's the Wild West.
I mean, take a guess.
No, it's not the Wild
That's
West.
That's the Wild Wild West.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, wait, no, he's a superhero that can't die.
That's Hancock.
It's Los Angeles.
Do you want me to give you the multiple choices?
Yes.
Is it A, New York, B, Washington, C, Philadelphia, or D, Chicago?
Chicago.
Why did you say that?
Well, I'm trying to pick. I think I have seen it years ago, and he.
It's New York.
It's in New York.
Okay. It's always New York or LA. I'm sorry. I went with the.
Who provides.
I don't know how to form the letters of New York. So I was like, how do you do an N?
But what did they. Yeah, you're right. It's hard, isn't it? You can't see the shape.
What's interesting about that?
I Am Legend.
Yeah, it was made by Warner Brothers. What's interesting about I Am Legend?
I know what you're going to say. I bet I know what you're going to say.
Okay, you say it.
Is it that it's set in the future and one of the film posters at the cinema is for Superman versus Batman?
Yeah. It was because it was going to come out in 2008 and then it got shelved.
Yeah.
Wait. I Am Legend came out... In
2007.
But it was set in the future.
In production was Batman versus Superman.
Right.
At Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And I Am Legend comes out and it's set in an apocalyptic future.
Yeah.
And in one of the street scenes in New York, there's a poster for Batman versus Superman in the background.
Okay.
But it never came. Their idea was that it was like a little in joke.
But also, that looks like maybe in the distant future where it's set, that film does exist.
It does exist, Katie.
And now it does.
Right. It came out 3 years ago.
No, I see what you mean. Like, it could only exist.
Yeah, but you said that in a way
that's
that
fallen apart, though.
Okay.
Maybe that's the subtext.
I think basically, right? When people watch Batman vs. Superman, that is what brought on the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Well, it can't be disproved.
Well, it can be, because it hasn't happened.
What is I Am Legend the one where he's a superhero that can't die?
That's Hancock.
Okay. I don't think I've seen I Am Legend.
It's about a...
It's a bit about...
It's like a zombie viral...
I definitely haven't seen it.
It's the third...
I haven't either.
It's the third remake of the Richard Matheson novel, I Am Legend. The first one was The Last Man on Earth, starring Vincent Price. The second one was A Meager Man, starring Charlton Heston. And the third one was I Am Legend, starring Will Smith. But at one point it was to be directed by Ridley Scott and starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, which I was really looking forward to. You don't like Arnie?
Different vibe. I am a big fan of Kindergarten Cop. I think that's his finest work.
Oh my God.
Sorry, I do.
I remember liking that.
I enjoy that film.
I think that was the first Arnie film that you could see at the cinema if you were my age.
That was the first.
I realise that doesn't.
No, it wasn't. Twins.
You know what? I remember, and it was in direct competition with DuckTales the movie.
Oh, yeah. And did you have to make that choice?
Kindergarten Cop was a 12.
Arguably, same target audience. I also like...
DuckTales the movie was a U. It's not the same target audience. If you were writing a book for a U audience and you did it with a 12 and there was one fuck in it allowed... Then you would be kicked out of the bloody Authors Guild.
I was 9, and I would I not have actually been allowed to see it then?
No.
Then how come I
breaking
saw
the law?
It?
See it on video? Did you see it on video?
Did you get
they probably would have just let you in. They probably would have just let you in. I saw some 12s when I was 10. I don't mind telling you guys.
Katie, you're very tall. You were probably just mistaken.
Yeah.
Were you tall back then?
Yeah.
You've always been tall.
Were you born tall? Were you a long baby?
Yeah, people like used to say to my mum that she had
weird.
My age.
If you were giving birth to a long baby, you know, and it's just like she's keeps coming, like she's pulling. She's been pulled. There's the head. There's the shoulders. Yeah. Very. Are you a long body?
Yeah,
I'm a long body.
I've
got short legs, but a long body.
The handkerchiefs.
I don't fit into roller coasters.
Really?
Because my body's so long. Okay. I'm tall. I'm 6 foot.
Do you have a long torso?
I've got,
is that what you mean?
Are we not listening to each other today?
Just
I'm a long
specifics.
Body. I'm a long body.
But you said you have short legs.
I've got a long body.
The body's long and you've got short legs.
Yeah, so yeah, a long torso.
I don't count my legs as body.
Really?
Count them as legs.
Wow.
If I'm going to eat a chicken or a turkey, right? They say, "Do you want what part of the chicken do you want to eat?" I say, "I'd like to eat the body."
The body, please.
I'm all about the body when it comes to chicken.
What do you have for dinner? A body of chicken. not creepy.
If you go into like a butcher's and they say, "What part of the pig would you like?" I always say, "I'd like the trotters." Because if I said I wanted just any old bit of meat, you'd end up with a bit of body. That's not what
so
I want.
So you go to KFC.
Anyway, I'm a long body. So I went to Euro Disney in September where there were no queues because all the kids were back at school.
Ooh.
And I went on Space Mountain 9 times in a row.
All by yourself?
With my girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
We're no longer.
Right. Was she a long body?
No, she was perfect.
Well.
So we went on it 9 times in a row. And, and a month later, I got... whiplash.
I was going to say, there's no way you're not injured after all that.
Was that how long your body was, that it took 9 months for the whiplash to...
It took a month for the... We're just not listening, are we? It took 1 month. I went on it 9 times. You're getting things confused. It took 9 months for Katie's mother to create a long-bodied Katie.
Yeah.
I don't think it takes... Well,
but she came out like a piece of spaghetti, but a really long piece of spaghetti. Because if you think about it, a piece of spaghetti is only about as long as your shin. So, for context, but
not
because
even
I was
body.
Because I was a long body, right? And I'm going to keep saying it till it takes off, right? Because I was a long body, right? My legs, obviously, my little legs, they fit in the roller coaster very, very well, but. Because my body's so long, that when you click down the actual roller coaster protection shield, whatever you call it, the shoulder bars, the ones that you know.
He really took the Space Mountain thing seriously.
We were going into space.
We were going
Taylor.
Into the vortex. Yeah, yeah.
You'd think that I would be taking it seriously if I was going into Galactic. So, Dan, you're so embarrassed to be with me today. I'm just so excited to be out of the house. Oh, it's just difficult at the moment.
How did you know?
Anyway, the bar that comes down over your shoulders.
Yeah. It's in the wrong place for you.
It pinched my shoulder, so I had to sit it a little bit. I had to hunch at an angle. So when you're going at such a velocity, you know, we were going at G-force. And when you're going at such a velocity, I was hunched over. And also, you know, my girlfriend, God bless her, she said, if we sit at the back, we'll get rattled around even harder. And so we sat at the back. I was probably right at the back. And a month later, I was hunched over. We were watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre in bed. She was just about to go to Australia for 2 weeks. And
you thought, macabre.
That's a callback.
That's fan club.
It did disrupt the flow of the story. So at the beginning of the film I was fine, and by the end of the film I was hunched over like a prawn. And my girlfriend put me in the car and she drove me to A&E.
And that's the last time you saw her.
Where they basically said, you've got torticollis. You need to take Tramadol for a fortnight.
Isn't that addictive?
I'm still on it.
Really?
Oh, Tramadol, fucking hell. So it's worth punching yourself in the face to get on it. It's fucking brilliant. So I was on, for any listeners at home, do not take Tramadol. Unless it's being
prescribed by a doctor.
All they told you to do, like no treatment,
it wasn't whiplash at the time, it was torticollis. And then.
What is torticollis?
It's like apartheid.
They said if you've been in torticollis. Portcullis.
Torticollis.
It was. It wasn't diagnosed as whiplash at the time. They said, have you been in a car crash? And I was just like, no. And I couldn't think of what it was. And it was Space Mountain.
No, Space Mountain, 9 times, baby. Hunched over like a prawn. My name's Nick.
My name's Mick Melm. And I got back to the flat. And then my girlfriend got in a car and drove to the airport. And so I had to be on Tramadol for 2 weeks. And she went to Australia for 2 weeks. My parents were out of the country in France. And my sister didn't really want to help me. She came over and she made a big thing about the fact she was coming over, let alone the fact that I couldn't feed myself or clean myself or even toilet myself. It was a really rough fortnight.
This is why I don't go to Disneyland. This is the main reason.
I there's not one day that goes by that I don't think about getting to Disneyland.
Would you go back after all of that?
I would go on Space Mountain again.
You'd go on Space Mountain again
Nine times.
Hunch over.
I wouldn't hunch over.
You have no choice, Nick. You're still a
long
body.
You've got a long body.
Once you're a long body, you're always a long
body.
Did
the torticollis cure your long body?
I like the way long body's catching on in
it
the
studio. It has caught the fuck on.
It has. We're all excited about
long
bodies.
I'm going to say it all over the place.
just so we get an idea of our listenership, if you've got a long body, tweet in.
So long body sounds like a Dickens character.
It does.
Yeah, well, there was that king
called
Longshanks.
There was.
Because he had a long body.
No, he had long ankles.
He was tall as well.
The shank is an ankle.
Is it?
He had long ankles.
That's the part of a chicken I like to eat.
That's why they called him Edward Longshanks.
Maybe it was
because
his
ankles were huge.
Legs.
No, it wasn't his legs. If you see the pictures of on the Bayeux tapestry, you'll see that Edward Longshanks had the longest of all.
If
you get the Bayeux tapestry up, right? A lot of people think that that's the border, but it's not. It's his ankles. They couldn't fit the rest of him on. He's not on the Bayeux tapestry. It was centuries before his time, or after. I don't know. Can we look that up? So, what was the first film that you snuck into, Katie? Underage.
I don't know. Probably a 15, and I was probably like. If we're not counting, what's it called?
Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah. Probably some horror film. Some 15 horror.
So vague. What about you, Taylor?
It didn't make an impression.
I really don't know. I can remember the first R-rated, what we call R-rated film for that sure. I watched, but it was at home. I don't remember sneaking in.
What's the equivalent of R-rated? Well, is that 15 or 18?
It's both. 18.
Well, it's kind of both, actually, okay. Because, well, no, PG-13 maybe is more... Well, PG-13. It says 13, so that indicates it's not 15. But I think it's sort of in the same...
PG's like a 12.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what you find now is that 15s are more like 12s.
Mm.
And 18s are a lot more like 15s now.
Right.
Because basically you get a larger audience.
Okay.
So,
okay.
So like Deadpool is R-rated.
Okay.
But it's a 15 over here.
Right, right.
But it's but when it's R-rated, it means that... And I don't really understand, but it means that kids have to be accompanied by an adult, like a PG. That's
yeah.
an R-rated. But if it's R-rated, it's a harder sell.
Okay.
Which I think is really weird, because R-rated is basically... Anyone can see it, but if you're under 17, you have to be accompanied by an adult.
Okay.
But which is what a 15... Which is what
12A is.
Yeah.
Which is what a 12... But it is what a 12A is.
It is.
But it is the equivalent of an 18.
Okay.
It's kind of, because it's the top... Well, then it's X-rated, and then it's... Which is adult, and then it's unrated, which you don't want it unrated, because that means most cinemas won't... It's not that people won't go and see it. It's most cinemas won't show it.
Well, what does unrated mean?
I think it's...
Or unclassified. It's when they say... you send your film in, and then the film board go, well, you need to make this cut and this cut and this cut in order to get an R rating. And the director goes, not making any cuts, and then said, right, we can release it, but it's not going to be unrated.
Okay.
And the studio will go, well, no, cinemas want to take that, so you've got to make the cuts.
Okay.
But someone like Steven Spielberg, it works the other way, where he'll make stuff like Jaws and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and they'll be released as a PG.
Right.
Even though... They're
like
fucking they're shocking and they're gory and they're bloody and they're like horrific.
Yeah.
But they'll be released as PGs because he's got a good relationship with the
Temple of Doom is actually when they started using PG-13.
After Temple of Doom, they had so many complaints that I think that they did, and I think
not even because it was racist. Just because
there was some
they
blood.
Pull some hearts out of people.
That's interesting that once you're over 12, racism is all right.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's more stereotypes than racism. But yes, I understand. I don't like that film at all.
It's terrible. In an otherwise delightful franchise.
Well, out of four films, there's two good ones.
Agreed. Although I didn't hate the most recent one as much as everyone did.
I didn't hate it. I hated it, but I watched it again.
Is that the one where he hides in a fridge to escape a blast?
Don't have a problem with that.
It's ridiculous, but I enjoyed it.
It's no more ridiculous than a ghost turning up at the end of Last Crusade and giving him immortality.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or the Nazis getting burned alive by the power of God in a box. You know, it's like...
That's true. Though,
I liked that they brought back, what is the actress's name?
Karen Allen.
Yeah, it was just great to see her again.
It was,
because she's my favourite.
She still basically looks exactly the same as well.
Yeah, but she was so happy to be there. It's just like, stop smiling so much, Karen. You're not meant to look like you've just cashed a check, you know. It's like,
so you're a, like, give us a frown love kind of guy.
Well, her
character, that's your cat call. Give us a frown.
Her character in the first one was really sassy and kind of like argumentative, and she'd beat up Indy and all of that stuff. In the Crystal Skull, she's just delighted to be working, and you go, oh god.
That's so very true. Actually, she had like just too much pressure.
We don't know if that was a director's note or not. Like. Do you think that was her ignoring?
The director didn't... Steven Spielberg didn't really want to make that film. George Lucas wanted to make that film.
Okay.
Steven Spielberg didn't really want to.
I love that you've got the inside scoop on.
What do you think I do all week?
Why are you Katie Wilkins in... Oh, you're Katie Wilkins on Drunk Women, but you're Catherine Wilkins...
Well, fun story. I mean, it's not a fun story, but basically, my publishers wanted something to differentiate my adult themes of an adult nature stand up and my PG young adult.
Because you've got a bit of a snaggle tooth, don't you? So when you're sucking cock That's an old bit of film material.
It
isn't
is.
It?
That was classic.
Classic material.
Classic Wilkins.
I'm so glad that was part of your old material because I'm like, Jesus.
That's fan club.
Where did that segue come from?
It was like the rudest stand up routine I'd ever heard up to that point. I was just like, oh, wow. It was,
I know. Do they get on you for your Twitter account? Like, do you ever tweet anything that they would, like, do they monitor you at all?
You know, it's a weird fine line. I am a bit more mindful now. Like, I took down all my videos when the first book got published in 2012. I had, because I tell that Snaggletooth blowjob story on, like, this video of me winning the gong show in 2008.
And, is that at the Lion's Den?
No, the Comedy Store? It was the Comedy Store one. And I had it up because it was, you know, I actually, back in the olden days of the noughties, I even got work off the back of it. Like, people would be like, oh, I saw that video, blah, blah, blah. Come and do this squaddy gig. it was really good.
And at the time, you go in, that seems like a good idea.
Where's the microphone? Microphone?
Exactly.
You're going to be wearing this.
Oh, man. But
the idea of it.
They all really want... Anyway.
I wouldn't do a squatty
gig. Did they make you take the video down, though, or did you choose to?
It was... I feel like that it was... It wasn't... I think reading between the lines, they did want me to take it down, but they actually didn't tell me to, but I think, oh, okay, I get the message.
And are you aware of having, like, followers on Twitter who are very young? Do you have young kids who follow you?
I mean, I possibly do, but you can't really tell their ages.
Yeah. I ask every single one of my followers what their age is, just to...
I mean, is there...
just in case.
Age limit on... Because you have to be 13 for Facebook, although I'm
sure... Oh, nobody gives a shit about that, though, they?
But, Yeah, I don't know. It could blow up in my face one day.
Well, J.K. Rowling is, like, very political and outspoken, isn't she?
Yeah.
And if you're a young Harry Potter fan...
Yeah. She's awesome.
Sure.
Oh, go on, that's not what you're going to say.
No, that's not what I'm saying. If you're a young Harry Potter fan, then, you know, you might have different...
What political views?
Political views or thought process as to J.K. Rowling. I'm not like saying I don't have an opinion on it. I'm just like saying that not everyone agrees with the same things, do they? And so if J.K. Rowling can just say whatever she wants, then why can't you?
Yeah.
But she will automatically have a wider thing, right? That's like anything, though, isn't it?
Well, she's actually using Harry Potter as a platform in order to say the political things, as opposed to.
I don't know. She writes other stuff too.
Oh, yeah, now I guess that's finished, isn't
it? Yeah, of course. Of course she writes other stuff too. Go on.
Name them. What of her... That other crime book. I read her the Casual Vacancy one. That's I haven't read her crime ones. But,
Didn't she have, like, a pen name?
Yeah, Robert... Browning, I want to say.
KJ Browning.
I don't know what it was. I love her on Twitter.
Was it a male? Was it a male alias?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then someone outed her.
Wow. I didn't know.
Although J.K. Rowling could be.
Somebody outed her.
Yeah.
Do you think
that was a deliberate ploy that boys would read her books.
Do you think it was her PR company that outed her because she wasn't selling enough books under a complete stranger that had just started publishing stuff?
Well, apparently, because she got outed super early, it was difficult to actually tell. But it was well-respected.
Definitely PR.
By critics.
Yeah, it did all come out first, didn't it? So people were... It was well liked, I think, before.
It's not selling though.
Yeah.
This is the new J.K. Rowling book, guys. It just looks like it's by a dude. That's what they would have done.
Oh no, I think that probably there probably
I don't
was
know
an element
why
of...
I'm being such an arsehole today. I really like J.K. Rowling in theory. to be fair, I've not said anything anti J.K. Rowling.
No, you're just playing devil's advocate.
Advocar.
There was that thing, though, like, talking about separating adult stuff and kids stuff, and talking about outing people, that, do you follow Zoe Margolis on Twitter? She was a sex blogger.
Who's this?
Zoe Margolis.
Oh, yeah, and she was anonymous as well, right?
She was anonymous as Girl with a One-Track Mind, and, her blog was getting millions of hits, she got a book deal, and then somebody at the Times outed her. and it like all blew up. It was like this whole thing, and like all the headlines, because she was a filmmaker and she worked on Batman and Harry Potter. So one of the
Batman?
I don't, probably one around about somewhere around 04, 06
Begins.
But basically this headline said, by day she made Harry Potter, by night she wrote about sex. And they really tried to make a big deal of the sensationalism of the fact that she...
How dare a woman be able to deal with children and sex?
Yeah.
To be fair, it's harder for men to do that.
Well, I know, because like...
To do what?
To juggle sex and children.
then
what a sentence.
Historically, there's not a lot of female DJs from the 1970s that have been put in prison.
But then, you know, when Peter Capaldi was announced that he was going to be Doctor Who, you could just type his name into YouTube and you get all those videos of him swearing as that guy. And
Malcolm Tucker.
Yeah, no one cares about, like, kids seeing that. Well, he was famous for... But they only care if it's like a woman.
Yeah, sure. I find all of that really weird. Obviously, I mean, we're all here because of sex. You know. Might as well enjoy
it. Some long, some short.
You're talking about... Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, either.
Our bodies.
Either.
I thought you were talking about... Doesn't matter.
It was kind of a double entendre.
Double long.
It was a double entendre.
Now my eye is itching. I'm falling apart.
Oh, Nick.
Oh, Nick. What can we do? Spin-off show. Oh, Nick.
I'm just considering it. I'm the O-Man. Hey listeners, you're listening to Nick the O-Man Helm. Oh, and you're listening to another edition of O-Nick. Here's my theme tune. It's not really, it's the only thing I had at hand, but it's very good. You haven't put the cheering on anymore. What happened to the cheering? It doesn't matter.
Natalie last week had an applause button.
Amazing.
We found an applause button, but it's gone. We don't deserve it this week.
Was it overused?
They've taken it away.
What's the quickest you've ever read a book in?
Did you abuse the applause button, Nat?
Probably a couple of hours.
Oh, we only had it for 1 week.
What was the question? I'm so sorry.
What's the quickest you've ever read a book in?
It depends what size book.
Oh, God, I wasn't expecting the fucking third degree from my co-host, Nathaniel.
Well, I mean, if you don't like a picture book, you might
All right, stop grilling me! I've already said my eye is itchy, I've got a permanent cough, I'm sniffling, I've got a cold, I'm not very well, you know, I've hiked myself in all the way from around the corner. Slightly longer for you.
I read Carrie by Stephen King in one evening.
Wow. One evening.
Yeah. I stayed up late reading it, but I remember that book really like blew me away.
Yeah. That took me a couple of nights to get through. And by the book, I mean the film. which film, though? There's many versions of it. The Brian De Palma. It's a very good film. I've not read the... My mate... came over to my house when we were younger with his girlfriend. Neither of them were very bright. And we were sat in my bedroom and I had like a shelf with like videos and stuff on it. And we were like, well, what should we watch? And she kept like saying, well, let's watch Carrie. And I was like, I don't have Carrie. And she's just like going, yeah, you do, it's there. And I was like, that's a book. It was bigger than all the others. It was like a hardback book that also had the Tommyknockers in it. You know, it was three Stephen King books. It's quite a short book, is it?
Yeah, it's not one of his long... I don't think he was doing as much coke at the time, so it's actually one of his more succinct ones. But I was just so... I think I was like 13 when I read it. And I was
that's a good
whoa.
Age to see it.
Yeah, bullying, themes, etc. I love the film, though.
The
I love the original.
The film's incredible.
Mm. Love a little
That's
Piper
interesting, because I guess, like, children... So at 13, you would read Carrie, but the books you're writing are aimed at 10 to 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
But they are pitched younger as well, right?
Yeah. There's, like, basic... With some young adult books, there is, like, they're about dystopias. There's, like, The Fault in the Stars, people dying of cancer. There's, like, really dark topics for, like, Hunger Games. All really famous... very popular, big-selling young adult books. And then there's, like, PG young adult, which is, like, just not quite that type of thing. So, like, slightly more adult themes, bullying, all that kind of thing. But not, like, no one gets... I mean, probably someone could get killed, but, like, no swearing, no kissing, no stealing, no doing drugs.
No swearing? Is there an absolute, like, absolutely nothing?
Do you know what? I don't know that... I mean, basically...
Are you trying to push the boundaries?
Well,
do you have
I mean,
a first draft that has, like, a little... someone says shit in it or something?
I was like, let's see what they think of this.
Just once.
Well, because also, So my new book, When Good Geeks Go Bad, is about a character who's a very good... geek, like, you know, obeys the rules, gets teased for not having cool shoes, like, does all her work and stuff, but and then she gets sick of that just blowing up in her face all the time and being bullied all the time, so she starts breaking rules and she starts rebelling. But I couldn't have her drink alcohol, do drugs, smoke a cigarette, kiss a boy or anything. So it's actually
no Snaggletooth BJ's there.
Like, none whatsoever.
First pitch.
Okay.
First draft, you tried to sneak one in.
Right.
So I, like, had to, it was quite a challenge, which was fun too. But, like, so I had her doing, like, graffiti, because that wasn't explicitly outlawed. And I had her doing, a bit of shoplifting. And she, you know, vandalizes the school can machine with Tippex. She writes tax avoiding scum on it. And it all goes more and more. She starts breaking school rules and wearing trainers to school. But she kind of starts going off the rails, and then it's about,
I love that kissing is worse than that.
Yeah. No, I know. Well, see, actually,
I hope you haven't been out kissing. No, I was just doing some graffiti.
Yeah. Well, interesting you should say that, because although they were really, like, pro, when I wrote the pitch and everything, the chapters about, they were like, okay, we really like the synopsis, give us the chapters about the graffiti. And I was like, okay, that's like chapter 8, though. They were like, yeah, write chapter 8. So I was like, it was a slightly weird thing to do. And then when we finally did, like, the final rewrites, they were like, you're going to have to take out the graffiti. So it's like the whole thing was around the graffiti. But in the end, we just had, she watches the naughty kids do graffiti, and then she doesn't do the graffiti. So it's like, so there really is a fine line, and but
that
I think
weird.
My publishers in particular have built their brand that parents can trust them and it's all going to be kosher. But I'm sure other publishers wouldn't have a thing, but it works.
It was the same when we did Uncle, when we did the pilot at Channel 4.
Yeah.
I was smoking and drinking, I was drinking and driving in the first scene of Uncle, and then when it went over to BBC, a year later, we weren't allowed to do loads of that stuff. Because it was BBC, but B, because in between the pilot and the series, Jimmy Savile fucked all those kids.
It wasn't between them. It was over. It was over.
But it was because it was because it was at the BBC. Because Uncle came out in November.
Yeah.
And then obviously Shane Ritchie did a tribute to
Jimmy
Will Fix
Christmas.
It for Sir Jim at Christmas.
Wow.
And then a week later, Jimmy Savile turned out he'd fucked all them kids.
I made direct eye contact with the camera. First time you said that, was that one off?
That's the security camera. Oh, it's these little ones that you want to worry about.
Fucked all of them kids.
When we did the, because it was BBC that basically did all the cover up, when we did the next series, it was just like, you're not allowed to swear in front of the kids, you're not allowed to talk about drugs in front of the kids, you're not allowed to...
They didn't want any more scandals.
You're not allowed to hug the kids, you're not allowed to go, you know, basically.
Wow.
So when we did the pilot, like, Elliot had a lovely time because, you know, he was like the star of the show and everyone was like hanging out with him and everyone was like, and we'd swear all the time in the car and his mum was on set the whole time and she had headphones on and we would sort of like, when we were driving around in the car, I'd be swearing it and he'd be laughing and we'd have like loads of fun. When we did the pilot, when we did the series, I didn't talk to him.
Wow.
I did. I sat with him at lunch and stuff like that. But the crew kind of like all avoided him.
Wow.
Because it was just like, as nice as it is to chat to a kid and kind of like be like, all right, mate, it's not worth losing your entire livelihood and career over. So people just were like, it's not worth it. So
So he was shunned just in case.
It was, yeah, it was.
That's amazing.
He'll be in therapy about this.
No.
That's, no, that's really interesting.
I see him quite a lot, but I mean, they.
The different environment.
The different environment, but also the different, environment. The different landscape of, political landscape of how to behave on certain stuff. But apparently Henry Winkler was filming a thing with kids up north, can't remember where, maybe it was in Scotland. It was a kids show that he was filming in England. And when he came along, they said, right, these are the new rules. You're not allowed to... you're not allowed to touch the kid. You're not allowed to. If you are gonna, you can shake his hand, but not for long. And if you're gonna give someone a hug, it's got to be like a sideways hug, and they've got to instigate it and all of that. And Henry Winkler just went in, and there was like 12 kids, and Henry Winkler went in, and he just was like, "Hey, kids!" and he just hugged them all, and it's like that. And they were like, "No, Henry, no, no."
Oh my gosh.
But he didn't care. But,
wow.
Yeah.
But it's a bit like, you know, when Jonathan Ross and Russell Brand. When they did that thing, and then everyone had to be really careful after that. There was like a whole super cautious environment because of the outrage caused by that too.
I thought that was a thrash metal song kicking in, but it's Nick blowing his nose.
I switched my microphone off so that I would be the minimum of disruption, and then you what? You do a fucking commentary.
Sorry.
I'm glad I'm not allowed
really
on
confused.
Your show.
We did Perfect Movie on Sunday night, and Beck Hill was one of the guests, and she just recorded a Drunk Women.
Yeah,
that's right.
And when she Rich was calling her from the stage, I was going, "Oh, Beck's doing like a funny sort of slurry voice." It's like, "Oh, she's doing like a bit where she's pretending to be a bit drunk and a bit," and then she went on and went, "No,
she's hammered.
No, she's hammered."
To be fair,
she did very well.
It was the best I'd ever seen her. She absolutely smashed it. She was great. It was really great. That reminds me that maybe one of the last times we'd ever gig together was your Halloween gig, wasn't it? Where Nat came on dressed. It was 2010. Halloween 2010.
Yeah.
Nat was dressed as Marty McFly. Yeah. Were you a witch?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was a bit all over the place. I think I was dressed semi like a witch. I had a wig and was wearing black and stuff. I didn't do my best.
No, it was a bit of a disappointing end.
But
to,
it was great having your show on.
I did I Think You Stink with Gemma Whelan.
That was great.
But that's like maybe the last time in 2010 maybe that we gigged.
Is that
together.
The last time we actually gigged?
Wow.
Oh. Yeah, but that's all right. There's more to life than gigging.
Yeah. I mean,
it only takes up, you know, between 5 and 30 minutes some nights. if you are gigging, I haven't gigged in a year and a bit.
Have you not?
I've had emotional problems. So we've got to play the game.
Yeah. I can't believe we've done an hour of this. This is it.
How did you find it? Was it all right?
I feel like Taylor's barely spoken.
I think when we listen back, we'll be surprised with how much she has chipped in. if it's been all right, it's just a casual chat, isn't it?
Yeah, so, of course.
It's been lovely having you back.
I want to come back a third time. So.
Do you know what?
This was awesome.
I say it to most guests, and it's normally bullshit, but we'd love to have you back. So what are we three?
This is a game, and you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before. You can both play. Beginning with Gary Bushell. Natalie Wood. Is Natalie Wood better or worse than Gary Bushell?
Gary Bushell is terrible.
Yeah.
Natalie Wood was in West Side Story.
Was she?
So she
got murdered on a boat.
Okay, I couldn't sing. They had to dub it in, but still. Terrific.
She couldn't sing. It's not her singing.
It's not her singing.
Oh, fuck sticks.
I know.
She's still better than Gary Bushell.
She is better.
It's not fucking, what's her name? Audrey Hepburn singing in My Fair Lady.
That happened too.
And it's not Christopher Plummer singing in Sound of Music, which is, I think that one hurts the most.
I didn't know that one.
No. And you listen,
bombshell.
You can find a original recording of him singing Edelweiss, Christopher Plummer singing Edelweiss, and
he's saying apartheid. It's weird.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad, Chris.
That movie is my apartheid.
What, Sound of Music?
Yeah. I don't
you don't like it? Oh, I bloody love it.
I'm not a big fan.
I'm not a big fan of the ending, but up until the Nazis get defeated, I love it. Carry on.
Is Victoria Wood better or worse than Natalie Wood?
Victoria Wood is better than Natalie.
Yes.
Better.
Ronnie Wood better be next.
Oh, I should have thought of him. Halle Berry. Is Halle Berry better or worse than Victoria Wood?
Worse.
Oh, that's harder.
They're high cards,
well,
I suppose, but
I would never
Halle Berry isn't that
together.
High.
That's the point.
Yeah, I know.
You've got to remember.
I'm going to say Halle Berry.
It's better than Victoria Wood.
What, I'm going to say worse.
What? Catwoman.
I've got to go for
Jinx.
Victoria Wood because I love
there
Victoria.
There we go. You're right.
Come on,
you're
let's
right.
rattle through it. It's been very slow this time. It's going to be a high speed game.
Gina Davis, better or worse than Halle Berry?
Incidentally, if you
better.
Do know if there are other actors that didn't sing with their original voices in movies, let us know. Tweet it. Carry on, Nathaniel.
Gina Davis, better or worse than Halle Berry?
Better. Gina Davis is the best.
I really love Gina Davis.
Who doesn't like Gina Davis? You can say it's a high card, but Gina
better.
Davis.
She is better.
She didn't
say
answer.
High card.
You can't say high card.
Say
you can say
or
it's a high card, but.
Oh, it's a high card.
It is a high card.
This has never happened before that we've had to play the fucking song again.
Steve Davis, the snooker player, better or worse than Gina Davis?
No idea who that is.
Oh, Gina Davis is better than the snooker player.
Gina yes, Davis yes. is better than anyone
they're
I don't
both
know.
I like
cards,
Steve. I like Steve
they're
Davis.
Very high cards.
Okay.
Felicity Jones, better or worse than Steve Davis?
Worse. Steve Davis is a ginger legend.
Which one's Felicity Jones?
She's the one who's in Star Wars Rogue One.
You can't even all judge
right.
her. You
all
can't
right.
judge her.
Yeah, so
Felicity better, yeah.
Come on!
Worse! Toby Jones, better or worse than Felicity Jones?
Oh, Felicity Jones is better than Toby Jones.
No. Toby Jones is better than Felicity Jones.
Wait, I might be thinking
you're overthinking
Freddie
it,
Jones.
Catherine.
Freddie Jones, better or worse than Toby Jones? Toby Jones' dad, Freddie Jones.
I don't know who
I'm
that.
Not up with
oh,
the
God,
Jones.
Fucking
he's
hell,
better.
This is
he's
the
better.
Worst one
Griffith
I've ever
Jones,
heard.
Better or worse than Freddie Jones?
I don't know any
don't
Jones.
You don't know Griffith Jones?
Oh, right, yeah.
Are you listening to the fucking things that are coming out of his mouth?
He's worse.
Okay.
What's the score?
Four.
Fucking hell. That is fucking appalling.
I think the score is
all right.
confused.
You've got
to
four. We've never had a four. Yeah, we have. You got four. You've
got a league table.
You're as good as Jack Barry and Bunny Galore. You're not as good as John Niven, Sean Harris with 10. Daniel Lawrence, Taylor, Michael Legg, Solomon Gray with 9. Claudie Blakely,
doing
Jordan
it.
Brooks, Suze Kempner, Evelyn Mock, Paul F. Taylor, Rebecca Shorrocks, Mark Smith, and Carl Theobald with 8. 7 with Hayley Campbell, Brett Goldstein, Charlie Hicks, and Matthew Holness, Jim Huskin, Laura Lex, Esther Smith, Ian Smith, Josh Widdicombe, Sean McLaughlin, Drunk Women Solving Crime Last Time, was Hannah George, Colin Holt, Andy Kindler, Merritt Larwood, Lucy Porter, Richard Sandling, Mark Simmons, David Trent with 6, and Yasmin Akram and Rob Deering with 5. Those are the people that you're less good than, and the only person that you're better than is Sam Ashurst with 3. So thank you for coming in, ladies. It's been very nice
thank
to talk
you
to you.
Much for coming in.
Oh, we've got shows coming up. We forgot to do that.
Yeah, well, you've forgotten to do it. We'll tweet about it.
Okay.
Oh, no. You're doing some
shows. What shows when?
Well, we're at the Vault Festival next week for International Women's Day on March 8th with Hannah Witten, and we also have a show at the Pleasance on April 25th with Zoe Lyons and Desiree Birch.
Yeah.
And we're at the Fringe this year, so watch this space.
Oh, wonderful. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you've missed all that.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.